Music is not sounding to you like it's sounding to me. It sounds like it's being played through a washboard. That's the best way I can describe it. You're listening to the TNT Hour on bbsradio.com, and this is our Wednesday broadcast. Mondays is hosted by network co-founder Don Newsom. And as usual, time permitting, I'm here every Wednesday to bring you news that you don't hear on the mainstream media. And there's really no news at all on the mainstream media if you compare it to what we know and what's going on. I've got with me today a co-host on the show. He's been with me before, and he's also a visitor now to Evident Footprints. And he's going to be on very soon again on that show. His name precedes him, as does his radio show on Republic Broadcasting Network, Road Warrior Radio, and his name is Chris Hinckley. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Don. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, my pleasure. I know you're following a lot of things. And you had mentioned off the air that you've been involved in something that's going on in your neck of the woods. Is it something you can share with the audience that's going to hit the media, or is it too premature?
Well, like you said, it's probably something that the mainstream media won't concern itself with, because there is no news on the mainstream media, really. Nothing more than propaganda, largely, I would agree. But yeah, I would love to share. This is actually a thing called the Trinational Agricultural Accord that's being hosted in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, at the Coeur d'Alene Resort today through Friday the 15th. And this is an interesting meeting. It takes into account, as you can well imagine, an amalgamation of talking points that are all really in accord with the UN's Agenda 21, and things like Codex, and the UN land grab, all different kinds of subject matter along those lines. But you know, they mention right on the face of it, if you look up the history, and you know, for anybody that's interested, you can go to nasda.org and click on the calendar of events up in the menu bar and find these kinds of meetings that are occurring all over the country, and in fact all over the tri-nation region, which is why they're called Trinational Agricultural Accord. Obviously, they host meetings not only in the U.S. but in Canada and Mexico as well. But these meetings have been going on for about the last 18 years, and they talk about things like food trade dialogue mechanisms and sustainability and all those kinds of, as I said, you know, Agenda 21, Codex Alimentarius, sustainability types of talking points.
Yeah, you know, this term sustainability has been twisted into let's keep what's left over for us after we get rid of the majority of the population.
Right.
I mean, if you sustainability in and of itself is a very benign word. It leads one to think that the considerations of food and water and energy resources are of an altruistic nature, when in reality, it's a play on words. They're interested in sustaining themselves. If it were otherwise, they would be talking to us, wouldn't they? They would be getting feedback from the public.
Absolutely. And I like the way that you put it the other day when we were talking. You know, they say that they're going to reduce world hunger by 50%. And you said, well, yeah, if you look at what they're saying we're going to kill half of the people, and therefore they won't be hungry.
Yeah, they won't be around to be hungry. That's the point.
Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right. You know, that's what they say. And in an email that I was going to put out in November of last year, I was answering the question that everybody always asks, well, why would they do that? I like Dr. Stan Monteith's answer to that. He says, I believe that they're going to do that because I've read their writings, and that's what they say, and I believe they're telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. And they put something that's so incredible out there that someone thinks, well, this is just somebody playing a prank on everyone. This can't be real. Why would my government do this? Why would these people to profess to care about the unity of the planet and people getting along and the cessation of wars and the creation of peace and prosperity? Prosperity for whom? Peace for whom?
Right.
It's quite obvious what's going on. And all you have to do is watch what they do to their own, even when they're out of compliance.
Right.
And we can refer to presidents, but now it's bankers, CIA agents, people in the stock market. There are people missing all over the place, bodies turning up dead, and it's going on. I'm sure we're going to come back to this. I might add something, too. And, you know, I have this massive piece coming out on Obama.
Yeah, I can't wait. I keep trying to, probe people to find out who knows what. You know, come on, tell me what you know. So I'm dying to know, but I can't wait.
No, this, it has to be presented in its entirety for someone to understand this, because they got the jump. You know, they began the race before the starter's pistol went off, if you get my meaning.
Yeah.
And they started with the propaganda and the media, what could you even call it? It's like a parade of fools. The media has just been building this guy up like he's somebody important, somebody who's really going to do something. I actually define what change is in the article, what he means by change, and I use his own activities as the perfect example. And in relationship to, this is going back to the topic we were discussing, in relationship to what you were just talking about, he shows up at every corner being covertly involved with that. And I'm speaking about globally. Not necessarily in relationship to his recent tour of the world where he met with leaders of Islam, and I'm not attacking Islam in saying that, but why go to Pakistan, or why go to Israel? What's the point? We know the scriptural prophecies that foretell what's going to occur in the latter days. Now, what the latter days might mean something else to different people. Could mean a total change in consciousness. It could be an end to this tyrannical presence that's been on the planet for some 450,000 years, despite what they tell us in history. So he's fulfilling some of the prophecy, that's for sure. And this man's activities definitely paint a different picture than what the media has portrayed. And you will see, when you read the article, you will see exactly what I'm talking about in respect to what you referenced at the top of the show. So, you know, I hate to be holding a bone in front of your nose and telling you it's a feather, you know. So just try to hang on a little bit longer.
Well, you know, like I said, I keep asking those who are on the periphery that might know, and I keep saying, you know, what do you know? Because I know it's going to be amazing. You know, what little I have heard is mind-blowing, so I can't wait to read it.
Yeah. Now, the real significance of this piece that I'm working on is to bring to the consciousness of the American people the game that's being played upon us. You can see that. Those of us who are awake certainly listen to the mainstream media, and you can't listen to them and know what we know, because we are involved in journalism. We are involved in the research of many, many fine journalists and authors. We interview these people on our radio shows, and in real time, we hear firsthand accounts of really, really important information, and often startling information regarding what is going on in our own country and around the world. And it's a lot for the average individual to take this in and sort of digest it, make sense of it, so that that they're not, you know, let's say, closing off their mind to the possibilities that these things are true and that they are happening. The biggest struggle, and I'm sure you would agree, is getting the person to listen to you in the first place. Forget about even trying to open their mind. Just getting their attention refocused off of the boob tube and the various diversions that they have carefully and craftily created to divert our attention from what is going on. And at the same time, hindering our ability to become more conscious. Would you agree with that? Or
I would, and you know, it's interesting. I call that a 20 or 30 minute barrier. I think that in this country, the mind control has been so pervasive and so cleverly crafted. I mean, we're well beyond Hitler's wildest dream, as far as I'm concerned, and I would consider him probably the best propagandist slash salesman, so to speak, of the 20th century. Because of his complete abandonment of any kind of conscience to completely sociopathic ends in, you know, saying things that he said about, you know, the fact that it doesn't, you just, in propagandizing, you don't need to be right, you just need to propagandize, because history never asks the victors whether they were right or wrong. So, you know, that was his attitude, and he propagandized as such, and so did his ministry of propaganda. But what I mean is, you know, what you're saying, you know, getting people's attention and saying, just take a look, just consider. It's so pervasive and so rampant. You know, I talked about a book that Rand Corporation put out 6 months before 9/11, and it was the book that was preparing it. In fact, it was titled Preparing for Homeland Security. They published it 6 months before 9/11, and there was no such thing as Homeland Security. It was a response to 9/11, you know, apparently, according to the Bush administration. So where did this book come from that was published 6 months in advance and obviously written well beforehand? You start showing people those things, and you get into Rand Corporation, and as you and I know, you know, you go back several decades with that agency scripting these kinds of things. And,
yes, they're part of all these think tanks from Washington D.C. I mean, the Rand Corporation themselves is such an entity, but they're one of the major military industrial contractors. And I'm not just speaking about wars. I'm speaking about the construction of the underground bases and the technology used, like these nuclear boring machines that can do miles of underground boring. And I'm talking about deep underground bases now, where there are whole cities with malls and shopping centers and living facilities for thousands of people, where they don't even have to bring the dirt up to the surface of the ground. It literally turns the dirt into sort of like a glass wall. And the technology that's being used underground, high-speed rail trains and that travel between Mach 2 and Mach 3, Rand is involved in that sort of stuff. So then we've got other corporations that are real big, and they're in the media, like General Electric. You know, they happen to be hosting the Olympics. Doesn't anyone find that quite interesting?
Right.
It used to be ABCIA that hosted the Olympics on TV. But, did I say ABCIA?
Right.
they've all been taken over by the CIA, actually. And many of the newscasters even are, you know, when you take this propaganda in, what you're thinking is news, if you use discernment, you can look at these people and say, you know, this guy wasn't around here a year ago, or he wasn't even around here 3 months ago. Where did they find this guy?
Right.
They're literally training these people, because many of the older newscasters, even though they were told, well, you can't report this or you can't report that, they weren't always told what to say. They were told, keep it to local news, keep it to accidents and disasters and, you know, all the negative stuff. Now they have such an agenda, and they have to outright lie that they get rid of the ones that won't do that.
Yeah.
That may have a bit of integrity. And it goes all the way to the weatherman in some cities, because they've got to lie about what's going on with the weather just as much as they do about what's going on anywhere else in politics or with the wars. So, you're right on the money.
What do you think about the, you know, like I said, I call it a 20 or 30 minute window. I mean, I think you and I and everybody that has any kind of an idea of what's really going on, and you start to see through these thinly veiled facades and the wordplay, the Orwellian doublespeak, you know, like you said, with change. One example I gave my wife the other day, you know how when the company's called, you always get that little message, this call may be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, people don't realize that's part of that wordplay. Mm-hmm. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you're interpreting that as them saying, you know, we may or may not record this call for quality assurance purposes or whatever they want to say. And I said, what they're really telling you in their Orwellian doublespeak is that they're giving themselves permission. In other words, we may record this call. In other words, we have permission to. And she goes, oh.
And if you continue to speak, then you're consenting to that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying. So basically, you submit to, you know, that, or as you said, you know, you consent to that recording. And she said, wow, I never thought of it that way. But, you know, there's a 20 or 30 minute barrier, I would say. If you could get somebody alone for 20 or 30 minutes, you could start to unravel those kinds of things. And again, you know, with Rand, you know, people, there's Pandora's box of questions that come open when you start to say things like that. Well, why would a company like, you know, a Brookings Rand or whatever, a CIA that's supposedly, you know, fighting patriotic causes in our behalf, why would they do that? You know, you can get to the bottom of those, but it's going to take 20 or 30 minutes to start to really unravel the mind control.
They were set up initially to do what they're doing now. You see,
right.
We have this perception that they've somehow transformed or morphed into something sinister, when in reality, the people that were behind the setting up of the organization in the beginning were involved in all the corruption and the international crimes. You know, we tend to think that these things have all of a sudden become bad. They've been bad from the beginning. The intent, and I've referred to this on some recent shows, even on your show to an extent, when I talked about the Virginia Company and the New England Company, Why is so much honor bestowed upon the Ivy League, the colleges that actually they were called that because they all had these monstrous stone structures that became institutes of education, and they had ivy. That was their connection. Literally, that ivy was like a web or a net thrown over the building to control what went on. Symbolically, they used nature to even show us that. And it's the Ivy League schools that are involved in all of this control, all of the research. And when they're paid millions or billions of dollars under the table to conduct really sadistic research into areas that no one could even imagine scientists were involved in genetic mutation and biological weapons and pathogens to cause illness in people and to cause agriculture. This is where my research is headed to. You see, it crisscrosses with your topic.
Yeah.
Why is it so many people that make it in government all graduated from Yale? Does it have anything to do with skull and bones, do you think?
You know, that's interesting. In Tex Mars' new book, Mysterious Monuments, you know, going back to the beginning, like you said, again, you know, to me, it's a 20 or 30 minute conversation you can have with somebody when they start asking these questions, yeah, but. Going back to the beginning of Yale University, on page 30 of Tex Mars' new book, Mysterious Monuments, he mentions Reverend Ezra Stiles, and he has a picture of the Reverend Ezra Stiles giving his Masonic sign. It's a picture in the Masonic Lodge, mm-hmm. a drawing, actually. And then he has a map of New Haven drawn by Dr. Stiles in 1775. And it has a clear indication of skull and bones right in the middle of the map. And he, the good Reverend, is the guy who drew the map, the Masonic Reverend.
Yes.
Going back to the beginning, like you said, you know, so... you know,
they're following precepts that go all the way back to 322 BC, which is the reference to that number that they use for skull and bones, 322.
I haven't gotten to the bottom of that yet. I heard that it was also possibly a reference to Genesis 322, which I think is intriguing as well, because that's a reference to the Tree of Life.
Yes. And I don't have my Bible in front of me, or I would look that up right now. But you probably have yours there, right?
Yeah, it's Genesis 3:22 says, "Then the Lord God said," this is the NASB translation, it says, "Then the Lord God said, behold, the man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil, and now he might stretch out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and live forever."
Mm-hmm.
And what's intriguing to me about that is that's the last thought that you're left with, the reader is left with going out of the Garden of Eden. And then that's revisited in Genesis 11 at the Tower of Babel. And then, of course, in the book of Revelation, the same concept seems to be reported over and over, that this is an important subject. And one thing that I think is intriguing, that I think, I don't know, I don't want to get off on a wild tangent, but real quick, I think it's intriguing that if you go to, there are some peculiar passages that seem to kind of support the idea that this tree of life, this fountain of youth, is something, you know, that is always on their minds. You go to passages like Daniel chapter 2, where Daniel is talking about this vision, the dream that Nebuchadnezzar has, and he's interpreting this vision of this statue. And most of the parts of the statue are relating to kingdoms, but then you come to this peculiar verse at the end of all of that. First, right before it says, as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong and part of it will be brittle. Okay, that's a kingdom. Daniel 2:42. But verse 43 says, and again, this is the NASB, it says, in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. Now that's the seed of men. What does that mean? To me, that could be a circuit board. I mean, what is a circuit board? But, you know, pottery with iron, so to speak, inlaid.
Yeah, it could be that symbolically. I think they're referring to a different species, though. Tell you the truth.
But it's the seed of men. Anyway, I just I find it fascinating.
Yeah. It can be, I guess, taken several ways. Maybe it's all inclusive, you know. Prophecy can be that way too. We look for a signpost, let's say, that leads us to understand what nation might be talked about. It could have been already that has transpired as well in some other reality, some other time period, and that maybe it's something that repeats itself as all the errors of men, the sins of men, are constantly repeated over and over again, cyclically, in other words. And I'm not saying cyclically with an S. I'm saying with a CY.
Got it.
As in cycle.
Speaking of the Orwellian wordplay, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Not exactly.
Well, that's interesting. Thanks for sharing that, because you know, it applies. We know that these things going on, and you know, there's the reference to the tree of life. This is no big secret amongst the secret societies. They're quite aware of it, and anyone that has studied the secret societies know that they like to use, we'll call it occult knowledge, occult doesn't mean evil necessarily. It's the knowledge itself is not evil. It's how it's used that makes it evil. The concept of living a longer life or living forever really is a spiritual concept. Yet these people in these secret societies have been founded and bent on ever since manifesting that into a physical reality, knowing where they stand spiritually. In other words, if they're minions of Satan, then they're acting on his behalf under some promise that Satan has given them to empower them while they're here. And if he promises them eternal life, do they really know from Satan himself if that means a perpetual physical existence? So what we see is manipulation in natural law, in God's laws, to recreate life in a laboratory and impose their creations upon mankind in the form of disease, in the form of genetically modified foods that do not nourish the body nor the mind, and they do these things to keep us again separate from our spiritual selves and thus our creator. It's very shrewd what they have done, yet we know that that's what they're doing. And it again ties into the topic you brought up right in the beginning, and it ties into the research that I'm doing.
Yeah.
That there have to be men behind this. Someone has to be conducting these activities. It doesn't just happen on its own accord. And identifying who the men are is quite important, because we put blind faith and blind trust in these people when we really should just be putting our faith and trust in God. And these are not godly things that people are doing.
No, but, you know, speaking of that, one of the things that seems to be overlooked continually is the old Trojan horse approach, mm-hmm. and it works so well, you know, which is why Cicero said that a murderer is less to be feared than the treasonable infiltrator.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it, you know, you're supposed to, I mean, we're supposed to continue asking questions and, like you said, not put undue faith in one another. And, I mean, that's what the history of this country is built on. It was Franklin who said, it is the first responsibility of every citizen to question authority.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going back to the Bible, since we were talking about it, you know, it was John wrote to test the spirits. Paul wrote in Galatians 1:8-9, if we, meaning himself, or an angel from heaven preaches to you a gospel contrary to that which you've already received, he is to be accursed. Meaning that he included himself in a group that might come and, you know, mislead people. He wasn't perfect, and so who knows? You know, it could happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was saying the same thing, you know, keep your eye peeled for deception. And I agree.
Okay, now I'm going to shift gears here a bit, not for the purpose of shifting gears per se, but I want to try to get you to discern what you think is going on with a story I'm about to read. It's not too long, so if you would bear with me, Chris, and listening audience. This was sent to me, it was brought to my attention by Renee in California. And we have news hounds out there that are now helping the TNT Hour. So we thank Renee for this article. This was posted, I'm trying to find the exact source. It was sent to me through peoplepc.com. Let's put it that way. Little Rock, Arkansas, and the date is today, August 13th, 2008. A gunman entered the Arkansas Democratic Party headquarters Wednesday and shot the party chairman, who was hospitalized in critical condition, authorities said. The gunman asked to speak to the party chairman, Bill Guatney, and fired three shots. He came in and went into this office and started shooting, police Lieutenant Terry Hastings told reporters near the party headquarters. Guatney, a former legislator, was in critical condition, Hastings said. The suspect was chased into Grant County, south of Little Rock, and apprehended after being shot, the police spokesman said. The suspect's condition was not known. Now, I find it interesting that they didn't name the suspect. That, mm-hmm. that should be a tip-off right there, mm-hmm. right, if we discern. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They chased him much like they did Lee Harvey Oswald, John Wilkes Booth. These guys were chased, right?
Don't forget, what's his name? Oklahoma City, Timothy.
Oh, Tim McVeigh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, the article goes on. Sarah Lee, and I don't think it has to do with the cake company or the baked goods company. A sales clerk at a flower shop across the street from the party headquarters said that around noon, Guatney's secretary ran into the shop and asked someone to call 911. She said a man had come into the party and shot Guatney multiple times. Lee said the secretary told her the man had come into the party's office and asked to speak with Guatney. When the secretary said she wouldn't allow him to meet with Guatney, the man went into the office and shot him, Lee said. She said the secretary described the man as in his 40s and white and drove off in a blue truck. Now, this is a breaking news update, and they added a bit more to it, but it really doesn't disclose anything extra. What's your take on it? Now, a Little Rock.
Right.
And what does that mean?
Oh, boy. Did somebody get Arkansas-ed? This guy's like Dave Hawkins would say, but...
Yeah.
I was suspicious. I didn't really dig into that yet, and I caught some of that on, I think it was CNN. And what was interesting to me was the little blurb of the local affiliate, because they went to a couple of local affiliates. I listened to two. The second one that I heard was, I forget who it was, but she said that one of the things that they were able to determine was that the suspect was fatally wounded and revived, apparently. Which, you know, again, I mean, with all of the things that you were, you know, pointing to, I find that very suspicious as well. It smacks of foul play and wrongdoing. There's no doubt about it. I don't know exactly who's involved. You know, I haven't had a chance to dig in yet, but I'm sure there's a lot more under the hood there.
Yeah. Now, over the years, we've had numerous accounts of the affairs of the Clintons in Little Rock, and they've always been of a political nature. I don't know if you're familiar with the Clinton body count. I presume you would be.
Oh, yeah. Well, over 100.
Yeah, the last time I looked, it seemed to me like it was well over 155.
Yeah.
May have even gone into the 200s, and those are the ones reported in the list. But they were all former bodyguards, campaign, let's say, like directors or fund managers and people that knew what was going on in the workings regarding Madison Loan and Guarantee, the scam finance company that was giving out political loans. They were using a bank just to hand out multi-million-dollar political loans to people, and they were probably financing it with the drug money that was coming in through MENA, Arkansas. The Rose Law Firm, Hillary and Vince Foster's connection with that firm. That was a firm that was taken over. I did research on that some time ago, and the man who founded that firm was originally from Kentucky. And it's got very old roots, we'll say. It was an old money law firm, but they pulled scam after scam. Of course, Whitewater could very easily have been a reason for them bumping off Vince Foster. I think the $250 million check he delivered to Hillary Clinton's Children's Defense Fund was probably part of the reason that he decided to shoot himself twice in the back of the head and then drive himself to a park. You know, the ridiculous right. stories behind all of these murders, and that these people would commit suicide all of a sudden, so close on the heels to a $250 million disbursement, leaves a lot of questions to be answered. And then the way the coroners sweep these things under the rug. Be interesting how this one pans out here. Now, I don't know anything about this Democratic Party head. One would think automatically, well, it must have been the Republicans, but it could have easily been someone in the Democratic Party that was not satisfied with Mr. Guatney's performance.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, one of the first things that popped into my head is over in Washington State, and this could be a similar situation, and that's why I really didn't want to speculate too much and get into too much conjecture, because, you know, I think it could go a couple of different directions. But, for example, in Washington, the state Republican Party chair, Luke Esser, was the guy who was responsible for suspending the vote count during the Washington State Republican primary, mm-hmm. with about 13% of the precincts left outstanding to report. And one of those was Spokane County. And Spokane County took more Ron Paul delegates than any other county in the nation, as far as I know, per capita. I mean, they took almost 100% Ron Paul delegates. And, you know, Luke Esser has been around for a while. He's no he's no fool when it comes to that kind of information. He knew, and some of the surrounding counties had a high Ron Paul delegate count as well. Anyway, he left 13% outstanding, precincts outstanding, you know, suspended the vote count. Everyone was upset for obvious reasons because Ron Paul was doing very well in Washington up until that point.
He was doing also very well in Nevada. I think the ratio was 7-1.
Yeah.
And they suspended the rules and shut down the whole convention. And
exactly.
Well, I mean, the corruption is rampant. That's obvious.
Here's my point. When, you know, fast forwarding to the Washington State Convention, Luke Esser, state party chair, there was some shenanigans. He appointed himself as the, I guess, de facto convention leader while, you know, during the interim of them electing one. But the problem was that there were some hijinks, no question. I mean, basically, they broke the bylaws and Washington state laws in the way that they handled the first part of the convention because of him appointing himself as de facto chairman. And it's clear, there's video on YouTube still of him. Somebody asks a question about a particular citation of the bylaws, and he says, you know, you can see him on video point to an assistant and snap his fingers and say, give me that slide. And he slaps a slide on an overhead projector, which is a citation of state law from some other state. It's not Washington State, which is a violation of the bylaws and Washington State election laws. It's fraud. And he knowingly, openly committed fraud, and it's on YouTube. You can see it. But the point is, you know, maybe this guy was somebody who was disgruntled with that kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, it could be. Well, we'll see. Now, is it a coincidence? This is another story that was sent to me, again, by Renee. And actually, I had this one prior to this, the one I just reported. This comes from John Gambrell, Associated Press writer. Now, for the listening audience, we need to consider that Associated Press doesn't necessarily mean that this is real news, or that everything we're going to hear is coming from a solely news-based organization. And if you do any research on the Associated Press, you'll find that they do have ties to what should be foreign intelligence.
Well, didn't the Rothschilds buy Reuters back in the 18th century, or was it the 19th century? And then Reuters bought AP, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that pretty much...
that ices that, right? Well, this is by John Gambrell, entitled Crime-Ridden Arkansas Town Expands 24-Hour Curfew. Helena, Arkansas. They probably say Helena down there, I would guess. Officers armed with military rifles have been stopping and questioning passersby in a neighborhood plagued by violence that's been under a 24-hour curfew for a week. Well, it seems to me a week has 168 hours the last time I counted, so that already is misleading. On Tuesday, the Helena City Council voted 9-0 to allow police to expand that program into any area of the city, despite a warning from a lawyer with the American Civil Liberties Union of Arkansas that the police stops were unconstitutional. Police Chief Fred Fielder said the patrols have netted 32 arrests since they began last week in a 10-block neighborhood in this small town on the banks of the Mississippi River, long troubled by poverty. I guess they're arresting people for poverty, it sounds like.
Right.
The council said those living in the city want the random shootings and drug-fueled violence to stop, no matter what the cost. Now, if somebody wants to sue us, they have an option to sue, but I'm fairly certain that a judge will see it the way the citizens see it here, Mayor James Valley said. The citizens deserve peace, that some infringement on constitutional rights is okay, and we have not violated anything as far as the Constitution. Now, listen to the doublespeak there. That it's okay to violate the Constitution, but they didn't violate the Constitution. The area under curfew in what used to be a West Helena or Helena neighborhood sits among abandoned homes and occupied residences in disrepair. White signs on large blue barrels warn those passing by that the area remains under curfew by order of Mayor James Valley. The order was scheduled to end at 3 p.m. Tuesday, but Valley said the city council's vote would allow police to have the same powers across West Helena. Among the curfew operations arrests, 10 came from felony charges, including the arrest of two people carrying both drugs and weapons, Fielder said. The police chief said the officers in the field carry military-style M16 or M4 rifles, some equipped with laser lights. Other officers carry short barrel shotguns. I wonder if that means sawed off. Many dealing crack cocaine and marijuana in the city carry pistols and AK-47 assault rifles, he said. We've had people call us expressing concern for their children, Fielder said. They had to sleep on the floor because of stray bullets. Fielder said officers had not arrested anyone for violating the curfew, only questioned people about why they were outside. Those without good answers, I wonder what a good answer is, like, I came out to see what all the shooting was about, or acting nervously, getting additional attention, Fielder said. So if you came out and you were nervous about seeing the shootings, then you got attention.
Hmm. Well, doesn't that go into things like H.R. 1955?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that the Senate's version of that, the thought crime bill, basically?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're able to test your nerves.
And the screening at the airports, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing, you know, if you have a distressed look on your face. Well, who's not going to have a distressed look on their face at the airport or someone shooting outside your house?
Mm-hmm. Right? Now, this goes on. However, such stops likely violate residents' constitutional rights to freely assemble and protections against unreasonable police searches, said Holly Dixon, a lawyer for the ACLU of Arkansas, who addressed the council at its PAC Tuesday meeting. I guess they're allowed to go to the council meeting even though there's a 24-hour-a-day-for-a-week curfew. Because of that, Dixon said any convictions coming from the arrests likely would be overturned. The residents of these high-crime areas are already victims, she said. They're victims of what are happening in the neighborhoods. They're victims of fear. But for them to be subject to unlawful stops and questioning, that is not going to ultimately going to help this situation. I'm reading it like it is. She said going twice in the same sentence. The council rejected Dixon's claims, at one point questioning the Little Rock-based attorney if she'd live in a neighborhood they described as under siege by wild gunfire and gangs. As far as I'm concerned, at 3 o'clock in the morning, nobody has any business being on the street except the law, Councilman Eugene Red Johnson said. Anyone out at 3 o'clock shouldn't be out on the street unless you're going to the hospital. Well, what if you happen to be going to or coming home from work? Oh, man. This is ridiculous. The curfew is the second under the mayor's watch since the rival cities of Helena and West Helena merged in 2006. That year, Valley set a nightly citywide curfew after a rash of burglaries and other thefts. Now, let's keep in mind, Chris, that often these are staged.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was... I'll let you comment in a minute. It's almost over here now. Now, the article jumps. Police in Hartford, Connecticut began enforcing a nightly curfew for youth after recent violence, including a weekend shooting that killed a man and wounded six young people. Helena West Helena, with 15,000 residents at the edge of Arkansas's eastern rice fields and farmland, is one of the nation's poorest regions, trailing even parts of Appalachia in its standard of living. In the curfew area, those inside the homes in the watch area peered out of door cracks Tuesday as police cruisers passed. They closed the doors afterwards. Yeah, now you did allude to the legislation of the hate thought crimes bill. I guess what are they going to do if I don't speak what's on my mind? Are they just going to accuse me of hatred because I'm not speaking? Are they going to turn my silence into a crime too?
Well, yeah. And you don't have the right to be silent anymore, apparently, because the Fifth Amendment doesn't exist anymore, right?
Yeah. This is obviously now, if you recall, it seems like it was about this time last year in Indianapolis, police were stopping people at bus stops and requiring them to show identification and asking them questions. And to our knowledge, that was probably the first organized effort to begin instituting martial law. So this isn't something that is being done for our protection or our benefit. This is the intrusion of Big Brother, again, 1984.
Yeah, and there have been a number of escalations in that. And one of the things that I've been following pretty closely that most people are unaware of is the fact that you have pressure from top and bottom, so to speak, in society. Gary Allen wrote about that pretty well in None Dare Call It Conspiracy, among others. But this pressure to squeeze people, especially to squeeze out the middle class, as we know, Marxists, et cetera, that's really the agenda. You get rid of the middle class, which guys like Mike Huckabee in his speech before the CFR last year say is the firewall. It's kind of the bulwark of society. But that pressure is being created from top down in the form of things like Department of Homeland Security, formed supposedly after 9/11, and then from the bottom up through, even local law enforcement, which is, supposed to be a peacekeeping agency, but now they enforce the law. But they're obviously being trained by Blackwater through companies that, Blackwater just acquired recently, October of last year, like the Backup Training LLC, which is the world leader in CD-ROM-based law enforcement training. And they say openly that they've already trained 9,600 law enforcement agencies around the country. And when you think about it, there are only 3,000 or so counties in this country. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of law enforcement agencies. And before that, acquisition, Blackwater was already saying that they were the world leader in tactical and arms-based law enforcement training. So Blackwater's training your cops, ladies and gentlemen, and so that's where the rise in the paramilitary use of force directives are coming from. The cops are being trained to behave their training is patterned after paramilitary use of force directives, and it's a scale of 1 through 10, and they'll use force from, verbal commands all the way to deadly force until you submit. Yeah. And that's part of it. But getting back to the operations, I think a lot of people have seen things like Operation Falcon, which seems to be popping up in one form or another all over the country, which was an acronym for Federal and Local Cops Organized Nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been a lot of Falcon operations. I think they've run 5 so far.
Well, I notice where I live, over the past 2 weeks, there's a suspicious absence of many police, although the police department has doubled the number of cruisers they have.
Right.
And the county sheriffs are also unseen for a while. And
it's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't everybody seeing that? I mean, isn't everybody across the country? I'd be surprised to hear somebody say that, that their budget for law enforcement in their county or their city hasn't gone up, but they can't, you know, when something bad is happening that you think would require police to show up, they're nowhere to be found.
Yeah. Sheriff. Well, I'd like to continue this discussion, Chris. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, which always happens on a show, especially when we're getting an interesting dialogue going. These are just some things to consider. While our media tells us what a horrible country China is during the Olympics, we should be reminded of the very things going on in our own backyard, and I'm sure you'd agree.
Absolutely. And one other thing, you mentioned the poor people in Arkansas being run off. You know, Article 2, Section 16 of the Arkansas Constitution specifically prohibits debtors' prison.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Well, yeah, so they're just going after them with assault rifles, aren't they?
Exactly.
Well, thanks for being on the TNT Hour, Chris. I know you'll be on again, and you'll probably even become a contributor if you're interested in an expanded offshoot of this show. We're going to be creating a whole section on the BBS radio website, which is going to deal with news items, and we're going to be contributors. And we're not going to regurgitate the news. We're going to be journalists, and we will also be including audio and video in that. It's going to be quite an interesting event for the folks that are listening to the show right now to be actually able to see what we're talking about. So I thank you, Chris Hinckley, and look forward to your next appearance on Evident Footprints. In the meantime, I want to thank Don Newsom for allowing me to be the host of the TNT Hour and for doing the sound as well, and the listening audience for tuning in to BBS Radio. And stay tuned. There are many more shows coming on. In the meantime, looking forward to seeing you at 10 p.m. Pacific tonight on Evident Footprints, when my special guest will be Mr. Wynn Free. In the meantime, have a wonderful day. And we'll see you next week. Bye now.